Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Defined by Moments. If this is your first time, welcome. If you've come back, we're thrilled to have you coming back as we continue our march through the book of Proverbs. So far, what we have done is looked through chapter 1, and we can see verses 1 through 6, which give us the need. Verse 7 was something that we focused in on, and that is a choice. Verse 10 is where we looked at a caution. Well, what we're going to do today in verses 8 through 19, we're going to look at the danger. Now, if you remember from the last time that we met, we just focused on that one verse, but I told you it was part of a larger context, and that's what we're going to look at. So grab your Bibles. Look at Proverbs chapter 1. We're going to start in verse 8, and notice what Solomon does here. He says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's searching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." Then we get to verse 10, which is where we spent all of our time in the last session, where, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Now, if you remember from our last time, when we talked about the phrase, "my son," you know, son does literally mean the biological son, but it could also mean a term of endearment. I think if you look at the construct here with verses 8 and verse 10, it seems to indicate that Solomon really is speaking to his son. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine about going through these Proverbs and looking for the wisdom that God has for us. And, you know, she said something that just made me chuckle because of the imagery. She said, "Can you imagine the dinner table in the Solomon household where he would drop one of these wonderful statements like verse 10, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." You can almost hear the hush at the table as he has said it, and then he launches into his explanation or his teaching at the table. So in verse 8, you know, we see very clearly where Solomon says to hear your father's instruction. In Hebrew, guess what the word hear means? Yep, you got it. It means to hear. When we look at what he says later about you need to forsake not your mother's teaching, that phrasing forsake not is a little strange for us. It actually comes from a root word in Hebrew that references the skinning of a dead animal. You know, so that kind of a phrase and that kind of image should evoke a certain response. You know, it's painful if you don't listen, because it would ultimately result in you losing your skin, your outer layer, your protection at death. So this is very emotive in what Solomon is doing here. He's using imagery to grab the attention so that we know what he's saying is serious. We do not forsake understanding. We don't let that go. Then verse 9, he says, "For they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." You know, in the ancient times, these would be, you know, accomplishments. These would be, you know, rewards for an athletic event. In our modern day vernacular, Solomon would be saying here, make sure that you don't lose them because they're your trophies of life. They're your trophies for success. So Solomon is laying out the piece here that you don't want to turn your back. Then he shifts to verse 10 where he says, when people that come to you that are guilty and they try to get you to fall in line with them, you resist. Then it opens up. So Solomon has kind of laid this introduction, and then he gets to verse 11. Remember from verse 10, I talked about how it was a classic if-then. He's going to use the same thing here. He is going to have an if in verses 11 through 14, and then he is going to provide instruction, the then, in verses 15 and 16. So notice what he does here. He says, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive, and whole like those who go down to the pit. And we shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us, and we will all have one purse. Really, this section, the if, is divided into two sections. The first is in verses 11 and 12, where we see the trap. They are premeditating what they're going to do. They are intentionally going to create an ambush for those that are innocent, those that are not deserving of the treatment that they are going to be given. You know, this could almost be, you know, a random selection, but they are specifically setting the trap. The unfortunate part here is they don't realize that when they think they are setting a trap for others, they are actually trapping themselves, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But why are they doing this? What is the purpose for them to go out there to swallow people alive, to bury them? We see that in verses 13 and 14 because they are seeking treasure. In the ESV that I read from, you see very clearly that there's a reference to precious goods. There is an aspect of plunder. And then the last part is there is a purse that will be shared. Their sole reason for doing this is to gain a monetary benefit for themselves. In other words, their God, their success, everything that they are seeking, their purpose in life, is the accumulation of wealth, the gathering of possessions, and more for me. That's what they're doing. That's the if. So Solomon is saying, you are going to be approached by individuals that are going to want you to do wrong in order for you to gain a financial benefit. Wow, if that does not apply to us today, I don't know what does. I mean, if you go back and look at Enron in the early 2000s, they were a company that said that their corporate values were trust, integrity, and yet they swindled so much. And folks went to jail over that because they were pursuing selfish gain. So that's the if. Solomon lays it out that there will be people that come and try and get you to do this. He's already explained in verse 10 what you do. You do not consent. But he's going to be a little bit more specific in verses 15 and 16. So notice what he says. My son, there's the term again. He's coming back to it. So the third time in a few short verses, he is saying, my son, my son, my son. This is personal. And if he is being that personal to his son, think of how much benefit we can gain from this thousands of years later if we would simply stop to listen to this teaching. But he says in verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. So Solomon says, do not walk. This probably conjures up, you know, some memories of what is in Psalm chapter 1, where we are told, you know, not to stand in the way of the sinners. We're not to sit in the seat of the scornful. We're not to walk in their ways. We shouldn't be associating with them. We should not be joining these individuals that are going to do wrong. They may get benefit from it, but we don't join them in that journey. You know, he uses that as almost a passive term, but then he gets very active in what he says, where he says to hold back your foot. It means to deny, to prevent. It means to restrain. So you can almost imagine a person about to take a step, and then they bend over and they grab that foot to try and pull that foot away from making that step. You know, I remember as a kid, I joke with my brother all the time that, you know, he pushed me in this creek and left me. In all honesty, and Sam, if you're listening to this, I know I fell in the creek. But, you know, my dad, one time I was getting too close to the edge and would have fallen into the creek, and he grabbed my shirt and pulled me back. He prevented me from doing so. So the active imagery that Solomon is giving here is to grab a hold of and jerk away. That is very specific imagery. But remember, these are individuals that are seeking financial gain through wrong means and at the expense and cost of others. But why? It says that they are running to evil, and the result is going to be hurting others. If that's not enough, Solomon leaves us to a transition point in verse 17 with something that's just weird. In this wonderful phrasing that he has, all of a sudden we go, for in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. probably thinking, what in the world is he talking about? Birds are very observant. Spend any time outside, specifically after the rain, and watch what happens. There will be birds sitting on perches looking at the ground because their eyesight is phenomenal. Yes, they have a small brain. Yes, they have a small body, but their vision is incredible. And they will see a little bit of a movement of an earthworm that's coming up or a bug, and they will fly down and grab it. So if you are setting out a net, a trap for those birds, they'll see it, and you're not going to catch them. So Solomon, in essence, is saying here, these actions that these individuals are taking of setting this trap are actually in vain. Then in verse 18, he goes, but these men lie in wait for not other people's bloods. They lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. They are creating this trap for others so that they can benefit themselves financially with possessions and with wealth, but they don't understand that they are the ones that are caught in a trap. They're not able to get out of this unless something changes. Look at verse 19. They come from a wealthy family. That does not mean that that individual has principled wisdom. But I would say this, how you use your personal wealth shows if you have principled wisdom. And that is what Solomon has laid out here. To his son, don't use your wisdom poorly. He's saying to evaluate what's going on here. If it is truly someone that is struggling and desperately in need, then yes. But if it's someone that is coming to you flippantly, then no. So we have to keep that in mind. Just because we may be wealthy doesn't mean we have wisdom. But how we use the wealth that we do have shows whether we have wisdom. Now, why is that important? Because how you live is how you lead. If you can't manage your own personal finances, why do we think that we would be able to manage a corporation's finances or someone else's finances better than we do our own? We can't. We should not make that assumption. How we live in private becomes who we are in public. Those two are the same. So that's the first aspect. It's an understanding that there is a difference between wealth and wisdom. In our modern world, there are individuals that preach a prosperity gospel that if you send money to X person and if you pray X prayer, then God's going to bless you. There will never be a hard time. Everything's just going to be fine. That is an absolute heresy based upon what we see with Scripture. In fact, Jesus is clear when he has people that are wanting to follow him. He goes, I have no place to stay. Foxes have holes. They have dens. I do not. Jesus says that if we're going to follow him, what do we have to do? We have to deny ourselves daily. We have to take up our cross, and we have to follow him. There is no guarantee that the Christian life will be comfortable or convenient, but there is a guarantee that God will use the Christian life to develop our character into who he wants us to be. Thirdly, commitments should be created with caution. I am not saying we should never make a commitment. What I am saying is that if you commit to it, then you better deliver on it. That's the bottom line. Because if you make the commitment and you fail to deliver on it, it will impugn your integrity, and in doing so will cause others to question the God that you serve. Solomon is clear. This is financial responsibility, but this is also personal character. And he is pleading with his son to evaluate with wisdom the things that come his way. And that once he has entered into an agreement, whether poor or whether smart, then he is to still use wisdom to continue operating through it. I would summarize what Solomon is telling his son this way. A life led by wisdom results in wealth used wisely. Thank you for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not-too-distant future, and you take care. form our functions. If you continue to hang around those that are pursuing this path, pretty soon you'll be on that path with them. The more time that you spend with individuals of that nature, the more like them you were to become. In my own past, I had to break off a friendship with someone because all they put into my head was, get more things, get more things, get more things. I didn't need that. I already struggled with selfishness in my life. But friends form our functions. If we hang around those that are investing in others, if we spend a lot of time with those that are serving for the glory of God, then more than likely we will adopt some of those habits. So possessions are a poor purpose. Number two, friends form our functions. Number three, never waver just to gain favor. If you know what's right, don't do something that's wrong so that other people will like you. Right is always right. And in this instance where Solomon is talking to his son, he is very clear that he's going to be tempted. He's going to be asked to undo the things that he knows to be right. And Solomon says, do not consent. He says, get away from them. Grab a hold of your foot and pull it away. We cannot allow ourselves to compromise what we know to be right to be popular. That is another poor purpose. It's not just that, you know, possessions are a poor purpose. Popularity is as well. We have to do what is right regardless. And then finally, number four, character is continued or crushed by your choices. Solomon's son, who he is speaking to, could have a wonderful character, but if he threw his lot in with these individuals of harming the innocent to bring benefit to himself, then his character is being crushed. But if he chooses to stick to his convictions and do what's right, then his character is being built even stronger. The decision is not mine to make. It's yours, and it's yours alone. So how do you get out of this trap of seeking possessions? Well, my friends, it goes back to what we talked about in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. It's the choice. What is the worldview? What is the lens with which you see everything in life? Solomon says what it should be. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. If you are struggling with this danger and you are pursuing things for yourself rather than using the blessings that God has given you for His glory and for the benefit of others, if you're struggling with that, I challenge you to go back to verse 7 and look at your fear of the Lord. Do you have that attitude that is in awe of God, that leads to actions that show that you have a godly life, so that others can adore God and that you are providing adoration for Him through your worship? That lens, that worldview will keep you out of the trap that Solomon is warning his son against. I will close with this verse one more time. Solomon describes those that have set an ambush for others that they are actually entrapping themselves. And he says, such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life, the soul, the passion, the breath, the fullness. It takes away the life of its possessors. Avoid that danger, avoid that caution, and live your life so that you can lead your life in the fear of the Lord. Thank you so much for listening to Defined By Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not-too-distant future, and you take care.